All right, well, it's my pleasure and honor to introduce our speaker today, Dawn Nelden. She is the mother of two, and she's a pastor living in San Diego. She says, "Don't let the fact that I'm a pastor fool you into thinking I have life figured out. I don't. Simply put, I live my life chasing after Jesus and raising small humans." Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you, Dana. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to make sure that I have this microphone on. Let's see here. It says on, so we'll just keep talking. All right. My name is Dawn, and I do have two small kids. A few things about myself. Let's see. Since you're a captive audience, I get to show you pictures of my family. So that is my husband, Drew. We are high school sweethearts, born and raised San Diego natives. I know we're a rare breed. And then these are my two kiddos. That is Jonah. He just turned 8, and Ruby is 5. And I don't know quite what to do with that inside of my, like, person here that they're getting so big. But this was actually at my sister's wedding, and we don't normally look like that. This is much more accurate. Taking pictures is a real struggle. I don't know what that is. So I'm so glad to be here with you this morning. One more thing to let you know, I do have a blog, and you can follow me on Pastor Like a Mother. Instagram, my blog is Pastor Like a Mother, so if you want to connect with me afterwards, that's where to find me. I love sharing with mom groups because there are things that walking into a room of moms that I absolutely don't know. We have things in common. I know that already, right? Like, we all have a puke story. We all have a story of some of our, hopefully it's our children and not like a friend or a husband that like takes it to another level. But we all have a story of being puked on, right? And when people start to pull out their puke stories, you're like, wait a second, I got one for you, right? Mine involves a very small airplane, a sick 2-year-old, and a child carrier. Forward facing. It was unpleasant. We all know what it's like to get ourselves and several small children ready in the morning. And it's as if every morning they have never done this before. What is that about, right? It's like, "Oh, I can't find my shoes." And you're like, "Well, they've never been up here. Not once ever have I found your shoes up here. Maybe start like down here." This morning, and for the last several mornings, I've had to have this conversation with my daughter. Are those your dirty pants? Are you sure those aren't the ones that you were sliding down the mud hill in the other day? Fascinating, because they look like they're covered in mud. And I think I told you yesterday not to wear the muddy pants to school, although I didn't notice that until we were at school in the muddy pants. What are you gonna do? I'd be willing to bet that the vast majority of us have fished something out of the toilet put there by our children, correct? And here's the other thing I know about moms. We have all been made fools of by our children in public, correct? My favorite being made a fool of by my children in public, I like to call the pole story. It's not that kind of a pole, so don't worry. One day, not that long ago, the pole story happened, and it actually starts the night before when my husband and I had a nothing fight. Any of you ever have nothing fights with your husband? Where like halfway through, you're like, "Why are we so mad? I can't even remember, but dang it, I can't let it go now. It's gone too far," right? So we had a nothing fight, and I went to bed, and I slept terrible because I was all out of sorts from the nothing fight. I woke up the next day in a horrible mood, right? Oh, it was not pretty. It was not pretty. And so everything was going bad, largely because my mood was so terrible. And I have this image of myself as I'm trying to get the children ready to get out of the house for school, crouched on the laundry room floor, which the laundry room in our house is the last gathering place before you leave the house, right? So imagine that space in your house where everything goes wrong in that last space before you leave the house, right? So I'm crouched on the floor trying to unknot the double knot. My husband double knots the shoes, and I hate when he double knots the shoes, and I'm like, "Arr!" And I had this out-of-body experience where I was, like, watching myself huddled on the laundry room floor, and I was like, "Oh, crazy. Not like the cute kind of crazy, like the crazy kind of crazy. I feel like I just need to tell you. And so I had that like heart to heart with myself and tried to get my, gather myself back together. And we get in the car and I do all the apologies, but somehow my terrible mood had rubbed off on my children by that point, shockingly. And so on the way to school, they're just at each other the whole way, you know? And so finally we get to school and I have the conversation of, we're going to be in public now. Can we hold it together just to walk into school and then you don't have to see each other? None of us have to see each other for like 6 hours, okay? But of course that didn't happen. So the little one didn't want to get out of the car, and so she was bugging her brother and pulling on his backpack, and he didn't like that, and so he whipped her around on his back, and I turn around to say something to the effect of, "Can you please just hold it together?" And I turn back around and I walk square into a metal pole in the middle of the elementary school quad. And I just stood there clutching my face, because it was either that or say not nice words in front of strangers and other small children. And my son came up and grabbed on my arm and was like, "Can we go?" And I was like, "Can you back away from me?" So we all know what it's like to be made fools of in public by our children. But I've discovered something else that all of us moms have in common. And this I found out kind of on accident. See, my husband and I, we used to be missionaries in Mexico, and this was before kids, and we lived at an orphanage down there. But some of the time, we would work at this dump in Tijuana. And what happened at this dump is the poorest of the poor had moved into the hillsides. And maybe you've seen pictures of this, where they've like created scaffolding out of tires, and they're living on these sheer cliffs, and the bottom of that canyon is the city dump for Tijuana. And every day, the families come down from the hillsides and they sift through the trash to make a living. Moms with babies on their backs, toddlers playing in the trash around their feet. And this was, again, before I was a mom, and I remember looking at their situation and going, that's hopeless. What hope do those moms have for their babies playing in the trash, right? But then I would watch these moms, and in the morning, they would dress their kids in maybe the only clean outfit they had, their bright red and blue school uniforms, and they would comb their hair in the tightest pigtails you've ever seen. And they would bring their babies to the breakfast program, and their family would have maybe the only hot meal that they'd have all day. They'd send their babies off to school, and then those moms would go back to the trash piles. And I remember tucking that away in my head, going, what is it that drives these moms, even in the seemingly most hopeless of situations, to care for their babies like that? And then Drew and I moved back to the States, and we became parents. And we sent our kids to a preschool that had an inclusion program for children with special needs. And this preschool made a promise to the community that said, regardless of your children's needs, we will make a space for them here. And when they did that, what they said to all the moms and dads was, we will love and value your child for who they are and what they have to offer, instead of measuring them against some standard of typical. And moms of typical children and special needs children would line up around the block at midnight to get their kids into that preschool. And I look at these two very different situations and I say, what do these moms have in common here? And I think it's this. Every mom, whether you live in poverty or whether you live in middle class America, whether your child is typically developing or has special needs, whether they're adopted or biological, all moms want the same thing. I mean, if you peel back the anxiety and the sleepless nights, the core of what we want is exactly the same. We want our children to be loved and valued for exactly who they are. Does that ring true for you? I mean, we know they're flawed. They are often the literal cause of our insanity, right? But despite their glaring flaws, we have this superpower as their mom. We can see that tree in the seed. We see the magic that has been sown into their little beings, the unique gifts that they could offer the world, and we want nothing more than for them to be valued for those exact things. Now, if you're like me, I get a little bit panicky about this because I want them to become more and more who they were created to be. I want them to lean into the magic, lean into the things that make them unique. I want them to figure out how to do that instead of spending their lives learning how to fit in and measure up. And I get panicky about it because I know how early they begin to pick up on the messages that they need to fit in and measure up. Some of you might think that you have a few years before you need to start worrying about this, but for us, for our family, this started in preschool. One day last year, my daughter came home and said that her and her friend had pretended to be famous on the playground so that the boys would like them. And I did that mom thing where on the inside there's like alarm bells and the inner you is like running around going, alert, alert, something bad is happening. And on the outside you're like, tell me about that. Sounds fascinating, right? And so she said, well, the boys didn't want to play with us, so we thought that if we were famous, they might like us. And I just wanted to grab her by her smushy little face and scream at her in like this totally normal, loving way. Everything about you is magical. Do you hear me? There is not one thing that you could change that would make you more or better. But here's my other problem. I completely remember what it feels like to be her. I can see through her little eyes and remember thinking that I wasn't enough, that there was something wrong with me, and that if I could just hide it or fix it, then I would probably be happier and have more friends. And frankly, I think all of us moms get a little bit panicky about it, because that's the other thing that we share in common. How many of you out there knows what it's like to feel rejected? Anyone ever feel the need to change in order to fit in? Anyone ever look around the room and feel like life would be better if you could only be more like her? And I don't know about you, but I just want to find a way to like magically bubble wrap my children against all of that nonsense. I don't feel like that's too much to ask. I simply want my children to learn how to bravely be who they were made to be, not feel desperate to fit in. I loved that song that you sang to start us off here, because that's what I want. I want them to understand that they were born for freedom, and that freedom is to live the life that they were created to live, not being trapped feeling the longing to live the life that somebody else was created to live. I want them to know that it's because of and not in spite of their unique, weird, quirky differentness that they're going to change this world. Is there a way that we can help our children believe that that thing that makes them different, the one that makes them stand out, that is the thing that the world is actually hungry for? And this question that I've been wrestling with, which I believe is the deepest longing of our mama hearts, is there a way that we can raise unicorns? Is there a way that we can grow kids who are vibrant and whimsical and brave and free? Kids who know that their uniqueness is something to be celebrated, not something to be ashamed of. And more than that, but that their difference is actually by design. I want them to know that it's because of and not in spite of these things that they're going to change this world. And I'm passionate about this because I worked in middle school ministry for 12 years. And I cannot tell you how many beautiful, amazing souls, individuals crafted by the very hand of God, who spend all of their time trying to look and be just like everybody else. But every once in a while, you'd find a unicorn. This amazing kid that wasn't afraid to stand out and be different. And because they weren't afraid to stand out and be different, they were willing to stand up in this world for things that they knew were wrong. And I would look at those kids and be like, whatever magic they have, that's what I want for my kids. I want to raise unicorns. And so I have spent these early years of parenting trying to take what I learned in middle school ministry and apply it to my little kids to help them grow into those kinds of people. And I have four tools. That was eight. I don't have eight. That's a lot. I have four tools or things for you to consider today that will help us as we embark on this journey of raising unicorns. So the first thing that I want you to consider is this. You have to decide what's important. See, here's a little truth about life. Not everything can be important. In fact, if everything is important, nothing is important. So you have to decide what you are going to value as a family. If you want to be effective in raising unicorns, you need to define a narrow set of values that you want to really work on and focus on with your kids. Maybe 3 to 5. Now, here is some ideas of values that you might want to consider for your family as you think about raising unicorns. I'll give you just a few seconds to look at this, maybe jot some ideas down. It's certainly not an exhaustive list, so if something else springs to mind, put that on your list. But here's the thing. Once you have identified some values, 3 to 5 things that you and your family think are very important, the next thing that you need to do is talk about what's important. Because here's something that we have learned, and you already know this, but you might not have words to put it into action. Language reveals culture. Language reveals culture. How many words do we in San Diego have for snow? Any guesses? One. Yep. We have one word for snow. It's snow. Do you know that the Inuit people of Canada and Alaska, they have 50 words for snow? Because snow is important in their culture. They have words to describe the way that it falls, the texture, the way that it rests on the ground, things that I'm sure I can't even imagine about snow because I've been born and raised in San Diego. But they have 50 words for snow because people develop an intricate language to talk about the things that are important. So simply put, the things that we talk about with our children reveals to them what we value. Now take a second and think about what you say to your children the most throughout your day. Now turn and share that with somebody. Anybody want to share theirs? What's something? Yeah, what do you say to your kids?
I say be careful, and I hate it when I'm watching. Be careful. I want you to go for it, but don't get hurt.
Yeah, totally. Be careful. I mean, go for it, but don't get hurt. Yes. What else? What else do you say? Yeah.
No.
No. Yes. Fan favorite. Anybody else? Be nice to your brother, yes. One that was surprising for me, you know how, like, I think I should compile a list of things I never thought I would say before I became a parent, but one for me is stop licking me. That's like a daily thing that I have to say in my house, and I don't know where I went wrong in my parenting. I'm not sure. The other one I would say, probably second place, would be stop touching each other. And if I was being strategic about shaping my family culture through the things that we talk about, maybe I would pick something else, right? Because language shapes our culture. And the things that we talk about teach our kids what we value. So in our family, I say more things than just stop licking me. One of the things that we really value is uniqueness. We actually spend a lot of time talking about our uniqueness. We talk about not being afraid to stand out. We talk about being distinct. And the word we use for this sometimes in our family is the word weird. See, in my estimation, weird is not a bad thing. Weird is simply anything that makes you different than other people. And at some point in my child's life, they will be called weird. Jonah, my son in particular, will be called weird because he dresses like Steve Irwin in public on a regular basis. And that's weird, right? But if I can claim weird as a good thing for him before somebody else tells him that it's wrong, then I have shaped that conversation for him. So we talk about being weird in our house. We talk about the fact that God made them distinct and that there's no one else like them. We talk about that, how they were designed to do something that only they can do in this world, and that becoming who they were each made to be is the only unique gift that they can offer. We talk about it in as many different ways as we can think of, because what we talk about reveals what's important. And this idea is important in our family. Now, one of the tools that we have used to talk about these types of things is our daily positives. I forgot a slide. There we go. All right, our daily positives. So I took the things, those original values that my husband and I decided that we wanted to focus on in our family, and I turned them into portable little phrases that we say every day on the way to school that help shape these big ideas in ways that little hands can grasp onto. So here's our daily positives. I can do hard things because I work hard and I don't give up. I lead by serving others. I will try new things even if I might mess up. God thinks that I'm valuable. I am loved no matter what. And I was made to shine. So these little phrases help my kids grasp on to our values and help them to begin to live this vibrant and whimsical and brave and free life that we're trying to help them shape. If this is something that you want to do, you need to figure out what's important, and then you need to talk about it a lot and what it looks like in your family. Talk about it in the car, at the breakfast table. Point it out when you see examples in the wild. Talk about what it feels like when someday somebody will tell them that they're different. Talk about how they might respond. Just talk about it a lot. And this brings me to the second thing you need to do if you want to shape, if you want to raise unicorns. Don't be afraid to talk about hard things. We need to be willing and excited to shape hard conversations for our kids. Shaping conversations is one of our biggest responsibilities as parents, and yet we have chosen to delegate that role to all sorts of people in their lives. We send our kids to church so that somebody more qualified than us can teach them about faith. We bank on the fact that school is going to teach them everything from the ABCs to character development. We even let them teach our kids about the birds and the bees. And here's something we need to be willing to embrace as parents if we want to raise unicorns. We have to find the courage to shape these conversations for our kids. I cannot tell you how many moms and parents in general I encounter who are afraid to talk to their kids about all sorts of things. And I get it because given what's happening in our world lately, it can be difficult to know as a parent, especially really at any age, what's appropriate or not appropriate to share with our kids. What do we talk to them about? What do we not talk to them about? We worry about stealing their innocence. We worry about getting it wrong. I mean, I get it. We're riding in the car. It's always in the car, right? And suddenly from the back seat, your kid's like, "Hey, Mom, how did I get out of your belly?" And you're like, and you get all hot and sweaty because you're like, the word vagina is about to come out of my mouth, and I've not had enough coffee this morning to make that anywhere near okay. We've all been there, right? But figuring out how to navigate these conversations is one tool in how we raise unicorns. There's lots of reasons why we don't talk about these things, but I think that the root problem is that we have been led to believe and then bought into the lie that we are not qualified to teach our kids about things like life or faith or tragedy or sex. But that's not true. We can not be afraid to talk about hard things. And I think we're afraid that we're going to mess it up and then mess them up as a result, and they're going to be talking with their counselor about it like 20 years from now. But here is a truth that I want you to tuck away every time you have that fear. Whatever it is, you will mess it up far less than a 9-year-old with a 12-year-old brother on the playground will. Okay? I promise you that. All right? So you need to decide to reclaim those conversations so that you are the shaper of them instead of the 9-year-old with the 12-year-old brother on the playground, okay? Now, the key to success in having hard conversations, I have 4 little keys. Before I get there, I want you to think about this. I used to tell my middle schoolers all the time, think about how you're going to respond when somebody offers you drugs before you find yourself in the situation when somebody offers you drugs. I have the same advice for you right now about having hard conversations. Think about how you're going to respond with your children before they surprise you with a really weird and awkward question or conversation topic, right? My path, the way that I have chosen to respond, I answer the question. That's what I'll do, and I'll walk you through 4 simple tools that'll help you do that. You don't have to have all the answers. How many of you out there don't talk to your kids about things because you don't think you know enough about it to adequately describe them the situation? Okay, you don't have to have all the answers. I can't tell you how helpful it is and how healthy it is if your kids begin to explore certain topics and you say, "You know what? I don't know. But that's a really interesting question. Let's explore that together, and we'll come up with the answer together." So you don't have to have all the answers. Take that hurdle out of your mental checklist, okay? You don't have to tell them everything, okay? So sometimes they're asking a question, and we assume 20 different things behind or along with that question. You don't have to tell them everything. Just answer the question. Which brings me to the next point. Answer the question in age-appropriate ways. A lot of times we interpret their question through our 30 however many years of life experience. They're asking it from a 3, 4, 5-year-old lens of life experience, right? So answer the question as simply and as age-appropriately as you can. And don't tell them everything. Let them guide the conversation, and if they ask more questions, just answer the question, all right? And lastly, talk about it before they hear it from somebody else. The more that you talk about these things, life and faith and tragedy and sex and any number of hard conversations that you can imagine, the more that you talk about them in small, normal, everyday ways, the more likely you are to avoid creating Everests out of these conversations that someday you and your child are going to have to scale, right? The more that we communicate with our kids that We talk about stuff in our family, and there's nothing that we can't talk about. The more these conversations, the anxiety will come down, and it'll become a normal thing for you to do. Now, the third thing that we need to do in raising unicorns, talk about what's important, then we need to model it, okay? This is the part that gets a little real, and I'm sorry about that. But if you're gonna model what this looks like for your kids, you have to ask yourself a few questions. Do you believe the things to be true about you that you believe to be true about your kids? Do you feel vibrant or whimsical or brave or free? If not, then this is a root problem. And trust me, I get it. There are days when the word vibrant can absolutely not be used to describe me by any stretch of the imagination. But modeling it is way more important than talking about it. Do they see you living out the things that you're asking of them? See, we can't lead our kids to somewhere that we aren't ourselves. So I have to stop and ask myself, do I believe that my uniqueness is a gift? And not only do I believe it, but do I live like it's true? Am I willing to stand out and show up? Do I allow myself to look silly? Do I have fun just because it's fun? Or do I choose to settle for the vanilla me, the safe me, the one that seems to fit in better and makes other people feel more comfortable? A recent study found that to the degree which parents have resolved their own questions of personal self-esteem, they will have more influence on their children than anything they might attempt to teach them verbally. Ooh. I know. Because here's something else that I know to be true about you. At some point, somewhere on your journey, someone whispered, "You're doing it wrong." And soon everyone's gonna find out. And deep inside, we knew that that voice was right. So we asked, what do we do about it? And that same voice said, you hide, you shrink, you grow smaller and smaller until you're the safest version of you, because safe is the only way to live in this world. And that, my friends, is a terrible, tragic lie. The truth is that we were created to live on purpose and for a purpose, and our children need to see us living like that's true. So expand, exhale, take up some space in the room. And if there are days when you don't feel vibrant or whimsical or brave or free, fake it until you make it. Not in an inauthentic way, but in a way that challenges us to live beyond the gluten-free version of life that we often settle for, okay? So, we have to talk about what's important, model what it looks like, and then give them opportunities to live it out. Now this, friends, is where the rubber meets the road. How do we let our kids practice this type of living? I think there are really simple, age-appropriate things that we can do to help our kids explore living vibrant, free lives. One thing that we have done in our family, I let my kids dress themselves. That might not be your thing. It was something that I just had to let go of, right? So whatever, not whatever, but I give certain ramifications for what they have to wear, and then we leave the house in whatever they put on their body if it fits into those categories, okay? So now she can't wear like a sundress if it's snowing outside, but if I tell her to wear long sleeves and pants and she comes out in the most outlandish long sleeves and pants, that's how we leave the house. And frequently in the morning, my husband and I have this whispered conversation. Are you really gonna let her out of the house like that? Yeah, I am. What if she gets made fun of? Then maybe she'll stop dressing like that. Right? But it's one thing to tell my son it's okay to be different, but do I let him wear his Steve Irwin clothes to school and risk him actually exposing his weirdness, you know? We had a very practical application of this the other day, where for the very first time, he wanted to go to a skate park, and we actually ended up at a skate park, kind of by accident, with his scooter and not his helmet. And the only helmet that we had was his sister's kitty cat helmet with ears and the face and the whole thing, bright pink and purple. And I was like, well, I have Ruby's helmet. You want to wear it? And he's like, sure. And inside I was like, oh, crap. Now what? I had that, like, panic moment because I'm like, there's bigger boys in there. Like, and he's the new kid. What if they make fun of the new kid with the cat helmet, right? But I had to just kind of squash that down and say, okay, put on the kitty cat helmet. Go have fun. And he got to live into the reality that fun is more fun than worrying about what other people think about you, right? So there are everyday ways that we can help our kids practice this. Because oftentimes we feel like we have to protect them from being made fun of. We have to protect them from other people thinking they're different. We don't have to protect them. We just have to give them the tools to navigate that inevitable reality that they will face when somebody tells them that they're different or when they don't fit in, right? Do we dance with them in the grocery store? Do we show them that it's okay to do things that are risky and that fun is fun? Another important tool in letting your children live out this unicorn life is to teach them to value the uniqueness in others. And I will tell you that this is the single most valuable tool I have found when it comes to raising unicorns. Teach them to value others. The two go hand in hand. See, by raising kids who stand out, we will raise kids who stand up. Kids who are willing to stand up against injustice, kids who are willing to risk sitting with the weird kid at lunch, right? They only do that if they're not afraid to be different themselves. I saw this in youth ministry. I saw it when I was a missionary. I see it now in my own kids. Helping them grow compassion and empathy for somebody who is different than them is a really tangible way to help our own kids live vibrant, brave, and free lives. So how do we do this? Well, one of the best ways I know how to grow compassion and empathy in little kids is to encourage them to be friends with people who are different than them. See, kids are wired to navigate empathy and compassion in really natural ways. And you see this when they make friends with kids who are different than them. Jonah, my son, actually taught me this. See, like I said earlier, my kids went to a preschool with children of all sorts of different varying needs. And Jonah had a little boy in his class one year named Emmanuel. Now, Emmanuel was a little person. And Jonah and Emmanuel played all the time. And we never talked about the fact that Emmanuel looked different. It never came up. But one day Jonah came home from school, and he was really upset. And when I asked him about it, he said that he was mad because on the playground that day, his friends, including Emmanuel, were playing with boys from another class. And he said to me, Mom, they weren't being nice to him. And I said, really? What were they doing? And he said, they were running too fast, and they never let Emmanuel catch up. And I stopped in my tracks, and I stood there for a second because I had never told Jonah that he should run slower when he played with Emmanuel. It was simply something that he and the other boys in his class had figured out. And there was also not a hint of pity in his voice. He didn't feel badly for Emmanuel because he was different. I don't know that he even looked at Emmanuel as different. He just had this intrinsic understanding that playing with Emmanuel required accommodations. And he didn't mind. In fact, it was obvious to him because Emmanuel was his friend. And that's just what you do when you're playing with your friends. So the best way I can tell you to grow empathy in your very young kids is to help them be friends with people who experience life differently than them. Expose them to other opportunities, that the way that we live, the lens through which you look at the world is not common to everybody. Another way we help our kids do this is we regularly take them to the dump in Mexico where we worked. And we don't take them down there to accomplish anything except for to play with as many kids as possible because proximity grows empathy and compassion in natural ways for our children. Another way that we do this is that we began to sponsor a child through Compassion International. And this is a really tangible way that we have found for our kids to build a relationship with children who are different than them. See, if you're unfamiliar with Compassion, they're an organization that frees children from poverty by providing them with the basic needs of life: food, healthcare, education, support, which is an amazing mission. But there are countless organizations out there doing great work. But we chose Compassion because of the way that they choose to accomplish that mission. See, they believe that relationship is a transformational tool. And they believe that a relationship with a child and their sponsor is just as important as education and healthcare and general, you know, medical support and all that stuff. And they really focus on this unique relationship. And so here's how it works in our family. Ruby and Jonah, they know a little boy, and his name is Wend Menegda, and he lives in Burkina Faso. And I did not even know that that was a place before we started sponsoring him. They know that his life is really different, that he has chickens and goats, and that he lives in a village, and he has to walk to school. They know that he likes things that they like cars and soccer. And they write him letters, and they draw him pictures, and they take part in telling him that he's valuable. They take part in telling Wend Menegda that God created him on purpose and that his uniqueness is the gift. And here's this crazy thing. Caring about a boy halfway around the world, caring about a child in their school who is different than them, helps them care about anybody that they run into. It helps them grow this empathy. Caring for a kid halfway around the world, it affirms their own call to stand out. Caring for a kid halfway around the world teaches them that Ruby and Jonah at 5 and 8 can change the world. Affirming the magic in others, magically, I found this out on accident, affirms their own magic. And today I brought some compassion packets, if that's something that you're interested in. But these kids, I put some on your tables. If you would just take 1 minute for me and pull those out, there's not enough for everybody. Take a moment to consider and thank God for the uniqueness of each of those children. That somewhere somebody is going to sponsor those children and affirm their magic. Just take 1 moment for me. See, I want to raise unicorns. We have enough people in this world who want to be just like everybody else. I want to raise kids who break the mold. I want to raise kids who stand out in this world because God designed them to do great things. I want to raise kids who stand up and care for others and affirm others because they know that their uniqueness is the gift as well. I want them to see that their weirdness will change the world. But unicorns don't happen by accident. So I want you to talk about what's important in your family. I want you to model what it looks like. And then I want you to find and give your kids ways to live this out. I'm going to close this in prayer, but then we have some discussion questions at your table. And I hope that this provide some things for you guys to really dig in, that you can leave here with some tools to put this into practice. Let's pray. Father God, your creativity is astounding, that you have designed and crafted each individual in a very specific combination of ways. You've given us traits and gifts and likes and dislikes, and you've placed us in specific contexts, God, to live those things out. We thank you this morning for our own uniqueness. God, that you look at us and our quirks and our eccentricities and the things that make us different, and God, that makes you smile And God, I ask this morning that you would help us with your eyes look at our children. That you would help us grow our children in a way that they don't question their uniqueness in the ways that we do, God. God, give us the tools that we could begin to parent our children in a way that they're brave and willing to stand out and stand up for others, because that's how you created them to be, God. God, we want this in the deepest parts of who we are, for our kids to be this way, for them to avoid some of the pitfalls that we ourselves live with on a daily basis. So God, we pray that you begin to heal some of those places in us, and God, through that healing process, that we would begin to shape our kids, that their experience would be different, that they would grow into the people that you designed them to be. God, give us the tools to help them do that. In your name we pray. Amen.